This is VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear stories from Katie Weaver and Dan Novak. Jill Robbins answers a question from an English learner in China. We close with the American story, The Last Leaf, by O. Henry. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
A new business in Las Vegas, Nevada, brings a touch of Hollywood to the desert city famed for gambling. The movie prop experience is a museum centered on the many objects called props that we see in movies. Such props are an important part of movie magic, the quality in storytelling that persuades us to suspend our disbelief. The new museum includes pieces like the prop credit card created for the character of British secret agent James Bond. It also has prop weapons on show, including the many kinds used in the 1987 film Predator. There are far less dangerous props in the collection as well, like the tall red hat worn by actor Johnny Depp in 2016's Alice Through the Looking Glass. Last week, the museum welcomed the media to the new space ahead of its public opening this week. The exhibition space is just under 300 square meters in size. The displays are designed to permit visitors to get very close to the props, the Las Vegas Review-Journal reported. The objects are as small as a golden snitch from the Harry Potter series used in the game of Quidditch, and as large as a space creature from the Alien films. Also on display are movie scripts, including one for the Bond film Casino Royale and another for The Dark Knight. Co-owners Aaron Kibartis and Tiana Armstrong got the idea for a public space to see movie props from their collection business, Hero Prop. The business sells and buys film memorabilia. We found that a lot of pieces were coming and going, and were going into private collections, Kibartis said. We thought this needs to be out for the general public. Armstrong said the team has even more pieces in storage. Some were too big to fit through the door, she noted, including cars from the Fast and Furious series and a pyramid from the futuristic film Stargate. General Manager Doug Stewart hopes the museum will be a place where guests can explore the off-camera wonder of prop production. Some props take many hours to complete, even though they may appear for only a second or two in a movie. The people who make these things never really get recognized, Stewart said. And so much work goes into everything you see, you cannot imagine it. A lot of them get thrown away. So this is sort of celebrating that side of movie making. There's so many people involved in this, and we can't list them all. Las Vegas Mayor Carolyn Goodman spoke at a ceremony recognizing the new museum. She praised the movie prop experience as a great addition to downtown Las Vegas. The Movie Prop Experience will be open 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. Adult admission price is $28, with lower prices expected for children, the military, and first responders, like police, firefighters, and emergency medical workers. I'm Katie Weaver.
Krill are tiny crustaceans that are a large source of food for whales and other water mammals. But they are also in demand by private industry for use in medicine and fish food. A humpback whale became trapped in a krill net last month and died in the Southern Ocean. Three young humpbacks were caught in the same company's krill nets last year. The nets were from fishing company Aker Biomarine, based in Norway. It said these were its first cases of catching whales in 15 years of trawling for krill in Antarctica. The company also said it has made improvements to its equipment to keep mammals like whales out of its nets. The krill industry is set to grow quickly over the next several years. Countries including China and Russia have planned new investments in the business. Scientists are worried krill trawling could threaten Antarctic wildlife. The krill trawlers target the same feeding areas as fur seals, humpback whales, and blue whales. Studies have also found penguins must swim for longer periods in search of food when fishing boats are nearby. Krill fishing doesn't bode well for our global fisheries, said Teal Phelps Bondaroff of the nonprofit Oceans Asia. It means we're getting to the end of what's available in our oceans. The icy waters off Antarctica are estimated to hold between 300 million and 500 million tons of krill. Antarctic krill is well researched, compared with the 84 other krill species in the world's oceans. Governments have mostly not opened new krill fisheries due to conservation concerns. But both Japan and Canada operate small krill fisheries in the North Pacific. In Antarctica, about 11 ships from China, Norway, South Korea, Ukraine, and Chile trawl the area's waters from December to July. Rules under the Antarctic Treaty System require trawlers to stay on four areas off the Antarctic Peninsula. They can catch, at most, 620,000 tons, less than 2% of all krill. Trawlers have not yet taken the full amount, but in 2020, they caught 450,000 tons. That was the most recorded in many years. If we introduce just a couple more big trawlers, we will reach 620 tons very easily, said Rodolfo Werner. He is with the Antarctic and Southern Coalition, a group of environmental nonprofits. The world's krill industry is growing quickly. The $531 million market for krill oil is expected to rise to $941 million by 2020. Research has found. Paul Skagrand, the company Aker Biomarine. He said krill should not only be for wildlife. Krill contain so many good elements for humans too, he said. Krill is used as feed for fish farming. Fish farming is the world's fastest growing food area. Experts expect global demand for fish to double by 2050. Even without competition from fisheries, the krill supply is under increasing pressure. Climate change and higher numbers of whales is decreasing the supply for trawlers. A 2016 study in the journal Geophysical Research Letters found warmer waters and increased ice melt could drive krill numbers down about 30% this century. And a single humpback whale in the West Antarctic Peninsula eats up to 3.1 tons of krill a day. The area has an estimated 3,000 humpbacks. In October, the Commission for the Conservation of Antarctic Marine Living Resources will consider changing catch limits and trawling areas because of conservation concerns. Scientists fear some nations may oppose stricter measures. China and Russia, for example, have often opposed efforts to create marine protected areas. I'm Dan Novak.
This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Samuel in China. He writes, "When I read the news, sometimes I see under quarantine, and at other times I see in quarantine. Are they different in meaning? In the following sentence, which one should I use?" Jerry left Hohhot for school in Hefei when the virus outbreak started in Hohhot. So when he arrived in Hefei, he was put under or in quarantine in a quarantine hotel. Prepositions are tricky for Chinese English learners. I hope you can help clear my mind a little bit. Thank you in advance, Samuel, China. Dear Samuel, thank you for writing to us. I am sure that almost everyone who is reading or hearing this knows that quarantine is the isolation of a person or a group of people to prevent the spread of infection to others. But it may not yet be clear how we use different prepositions with the word quarantine. Let us begin with under. Since May 2020, language researchers have collected what people are saying related to the pandemic in 20 different English-speaking countries. They call the result the coronavirus corpus. I searched in that collection and learned that under quarantine is much less common than in quarantine. Here are some examples. All close contacts of the coronavirus cases have been placed under a quarantine order. Following his classmate's positive test, the 11-year-old was placed under quarantine on Thursday. Many countries put their entire populations under strict quarantine in order to prevent the virus from spreading. Compare these examples of how in quarantine appears. Some schools are offering meals to students in quarantine. New Zealand requires a 10-day stay in hotel quarantine for all travelers. Note that the words put and place appear before under quarantine in our examples. Often, there is an official organization taking this kind of action. You can also find examples of putting or placing someone in quarantine, but they are less common. The short answer to your question, Samuel, is that you would not be wrong to use either under or in before the word quarantine in your example. But English speakers would be more likely to use under quarantine after the verb put in the statement. When he arrived in Hefei, he was put under quarantine in a quarantine hotel. What question do you have about American English? send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Jill Robbins.
Our story today is called The Last Leaf. It was written by O. Henry. Here is Barbara Klein with the story.
Many artists lived in the Greenwich Village area of New York. Two young women named Sue and Johnsy shared a studio apartment at the top of a three-story building. Johnsy's real name was Joanna. In November, a cold, unseen stranger came to visit the city. This disease, pneumonia, killed many people. Johnsy lay on her bed, hardly moving. She looked through the small window. She could see the side of the brick house next to her building. One morning, a doctor examined Johnsy and took her temperature. Then he spoke with Sue in another room.
"She has one chance in, let us say, 10, he said. "And that chance is for her to want to live. Your friend has made up her mind that she is not going to get well. Has she anything on her mind?"
She wanted to paint the Bay of Naples in Italy someday, said Sue.
"Paint?" said the doctor. "Bosh! Has she anything on her mind worth thinking twice? A man, for example?"
"A man," said Sue, "is a man worth..." "But no, doctor, there is nothing of the kind."
"I will do all that science can do," said the doctor. "But whenever my patient begins to count the carriages at her funeral, I take away 50% from the curative power of medicines."
After the doctor had gone, Sue went into the workroom and cried. Then she went to Johnsy's room with her drawing board, whistling Ragtime. Johnsy lay with her face toward the window. Sue stopped whistling, thinking she was asleep. She began making a pen and ink drawing for a story in a magazine. Young artists must work their way to art by making pictures for magazine stories. Sue heard a low sound, several times repeated. She went quickly to the bedside. Johnsy's eyes were open wide. She was looking out the window and counting backward. 12, she said, and a little later, 11, and then 10, and 9, and then 8, and 7, almost together. Sue looked out the window. What was there to count? There was only an empty yard and the blank side of the house 7 meters away. An old ivy vine, going bad at the roots, climbed halfway up the wall. The cold breath of autumn had stricken leaves from the plant until its branches, almost bare, hung on the bricks. "What is it, dear?" asked Sue.
6, said Johnsy quietly. "They're falling faster now. 3 days ago, there were almost 100. It made my head hurt to count them. But now, it's easy. There goes another one. There are only 5 left now."
"5 what?" dear? Asked Sue. Leaves on the plant. When the last one falls, I must go too. I've known that for 3 days. Didn't the doctor tell you?
Oh, I never heard of such a thing, said Sue. What have old ivy leaves to do with your getting well? And you used to love that vine. Don't be silly. Why, the doctor told me this morning that your chances for getting well real soon were, let's see exactly what he said. He said the chances were 10 to 1. Try to eat some soup now, and let me go back to my drawing so I can sell it to the magazine and buy food and wine for us.
You needn't get any more wine, said Jauncey, keeping her eyes fixed out the window. There goes another one. No, I don't want any soup. That leaves just 4. I want to see the last one fall before it gets dark. Then I'll go, too.
Jauncey, dear, said Sue, will you promise me to keep your eyes closed and not look out the window until I'm done working? I must hand those drawings in by tomorrow.
Tell me as soon as you have finished, said Jauncey, closing her eyes and lying white and still as a fallen statue.
I want to see the last one fall. I'm tired of waiting. I'm tired of thinking. I want to turn loose my hold on everything and go sailing down, down, just like one of those poor, tired leaves.
Try to sleep, said Sue. I must call Mr. Behrman up to be my model for my drawing of an old miner. Don't try to move until I come back. Old Behrman was a painter who lived on the ground floor of the apartment building. Behrman was a failure in art. For years, he had always been planning to paint a work of art, but had never yet begun it. He earned a little money by serving as a model to artists who could not pay for a professional model. He was a fierce little old man who protected the 2 young women in the studio apartment above him. Sue found Behrman in his room. In one area was a blank canvas that had been waiting 25 years for the first line of paint. Sue told him about Jauncey and how she feared that her friend would float away like a leaf. Old Behrman was angered at such an idea.
Are there people in the world with the foolishness to die because leaves drop off a vine? Why do you let that silly business come in her brain?
She is very sick and weak, said Sue, and the disease has left her mind full of strange ideas.
This is not any place in which one so good as Miss Jauncey shall lie sick, yelled Behrman. Some day I will paint a masterpiece, and we shall all go away.
Jauncey was sleeping when they went upstairs. Sue pulled the shade down to cover the window. She and Behrman went into the other room. They looked out a window fearfully at the ivy vine. Then they looked at each other without speaking. A cold rain was falling, mixed with snow. Behrman sat and posed as the miner. The next morning, Sue awoke after an hour's sleep. She found Jauncey with wide-open eyes staring at the covered window.
"Pull up the shade. I want to see," she ordered quietly.
Sue obeyed. After the beating rain and fierce wind that blew through the night, there yet stood against the wall one ivy leaf. It was the last one on the vine. It was still dark green at the center, but its edges were colored with the yellow. It hung bravely from the branch about 7 meters above the ground. "It is the last one," said Jauncey. "I thought it would surely fall during the night. I heard the wind. It will fall today, and I shall die at the same time." "Dear, dear," said Sue, leaning her worn face toward the bed. "Think of me, if you won't think of yourself. What would I do?" But Jauncey did not answer. The next morning, when it was light, Jauncey demanded that the window shade be raised. The ivy leaf was still there. Jauncey lay for a long time looking at it. And then she called to Sue, who was preparing chicken soup. "I've been a bad girl," said Jauncey. "Something has made that last leaf stay there to show me how bad I was. It is wrong to want to die. You may bring me a little soup now." An hour later, she said, "Someday I hope to paint the Bay of Naples." Later in the day, the doctor came, and Sue talked to him in the hallway. "Even chances," said the doctor. "With good care, you'll win. And now I must see another case I have in your building. Behrman, his name is. Some kind of an artist, I believe. Pneumonia, too. He is an old, weak man, and his case is severe. There's no hope for him, but he goes to the hospital today to ease his pain." The next day, the doctor said to Sue, "She's out of danger. You won. Nutrition and care now. That's all." Later that day, Sue came to the bed where Jauncey lay and put one arm around her. "I have something to tell you, White Mouse," she said. "Mr. Behrman died of pneumonia today in the hospital. He was sick only 2 days. They found him the morning of the first day in his room downstairs, helpless with pain. His shoes and clothing were completely wet and icy cold. They could not imagine where he had been on such a terrible night. And then they found a lantern, still lighted, and they found a ladder that had been moved from its place, and art supplies and a painting board with green and yellow colors mixed on it. And look out the window, dear, at the last ivy leaf on the wall. Didn't you wonder why it never moved when the wind blew? Oh, darling, it is Behrman's masterpiece. He painted it there the night that the last leaf fell."
You have heard the story, The Last Leaf, by O. Henry. Your storyteller was Barbara Klein. This story was adapted by Shelley Gullist and produced by Luan Davis. I'm Faith Lapidus.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.